Outside the Box.
Hello and welcome to Outside the Box. I'm Hannah Dunleavy and this month I am joined by no Mickey Noonan to say something inappropriate. Mickey's having a bit of a holiday. So Jen Offord, no pressure.
Just me. Just me.
So, couple of things to plug that are coming up. New series of Blue Lights. That's series two of Blue Lights. I know you were a fan, yeah. Jen. You suggested I watched it. I did watch it. I thought it was very good. Belfast-based, and actually Belfast-based as opposed to Belfast filmed, which is what normally happens with BBC dramas. This one's actually based there. I would talk more about it, but I've got an interview with one of its stars, Andy Osho, which we will be able to listen to in a couple of weeks. So I might contain my Blue Light story to that. But anything you wanted to add, Jen?
I saw that on the schedule and I was like, ooh, when did that happen? That's very exciting. I really enjoyed it. I thought the first series was great. So yeah, very excited. Good news.
I've seen a couple on the preview service. Boom. Because I'm talking to Andy. I think the quality has not diminished.
Good.
Even though it's lost Richard Dormer at the end of last series.
Which was very sad.
And Richard Dormer, I suppose, was the big name in it. Okay, Apple TV. There's a couple of things that I haven't watched, but I might watch at some point. Sugar, which is very new. I think that's only appeared this week, which is a LAE set detective drama featuring Colin Farrell. Don't know anything more than that. I just saw it on the wheel, wrote those details down. Also, Palm Royal, which is a comedy drama starring Kristen Wiig, Alison Janney and Carol Burnett, which is a good lineup. Yeah. That is also on Apple TV. That's set in Florida. I don't know much more about that, but I might get around to watching that at some point. This Town is now on the BBC, written by Stephen Knight, who's the guy responsible for both Peaky Blinders and Tanks, Tanks, Tanks.
What a weird collection.
It's so laddie. He's like the 21st century Guy Ritchie, isn't he? That's set in Birmingham in the 1980s. Ripley, which everybody has been talking
what
about.
What is this about? Because I've seen people
Netflix.
Talking about it. What's the premise of it? Is it Ripley as in Aliens or Ripley as in The Talented Mr.? I don't know.
As in The Talented Mr. Right. Ripley, but I did see someone the other day saying, what do you mean? It's not even set on the Nostromo. What's going on?
I think that might be my
confusion. Which made me laugh. Mm. Starring Andrew Scott as Ripley. Now, I love Patricia Highsmith, and give you an indication of how much I love Patricia Highsmith. I really like the film The Talented Mr. Ripley, even though it's got both Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow in it.
Yes.
I'm not going to watch it, though, partly because I don't really like Andrew Scott's style of acting, but predominantly because he's just too old. He is absolutely too damn old to be playing the young Ripley.
He's got a very youthful demeanour, though, doesn't he? I think he could pass for...
He could pass for late 30s, but they're supposed to be in their 20s.
Okay, yeah. Maybe give the part to a 20-year-old then, yeah.
Also, absolutely not going to watch something that replaces Philip Seymour Hoffman with the kid of Sting.
Fair.
Just not going to watch it.
Fair.
Also, I just wanted to mention Free Body Problem, which is on Netflix. You haven't
watched
it, have
you? No, but my best friend's aunt art directed it, so did the props and stuff.
I think it is interesting. I haven't really had time to watch it. I watched two episodes. It's sci-fi. It opens with, and this is what made me watch it, because I saw a lot of talk about it on social media. It opens with this incredible scene in which a man is beaten to death during the Cultural Revolution in China, which... is like a really bold start. It has a really eclectic cast, and part of the plot is about this game, essentially, that people play. And every time they go into a game, it's absolutely riddled with British actors. Rhys Shearsmith and Mark Gatiss are in there. Phil Wang is in there. Just all sorts of fun people. So I think it might be fun. It's about physics, but I definitely don't think you have to understand physics, because it's made up physics, obviously, because it's a Netflix drama. So I might return to that. I thought it looked quite interesting. But let's talk about something we have watched. Last time I spoke about Masters of the Air, which has come to an end now, and I just wanted to do thoughts at the end of it, which is that it isn't Band of Brothers. There's no way it's going to be Band of Brothers. I've seen Band of Brothers many, many times. There's no way I'm going to be as attached to it. It's by the same guys, obviously, the same team. And by the same guys, I mean it like Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg. So, you know, it's absolute quality in that sense. I think it was very, very good. Callum Turner, to me, was the real standout in it. I thought he was absolutely magnificent. And there was a scene that I just want to mention, probably the most impressive thing that I'll probably see on TV all year. Now, it's about pilots during the Second World War. Obviously, a shitload of them got shot down and many of them survived. And they ended up in Stalag Luft 3, which, if people don't know what that was the prisoner of war camp from which the Great Escape happened.
Okay. What about Escape to Victory? Is it the same one?
I don't know what that is, actually.
Don't you? Pelé, Sylvester Stallone, Michael Caine, Bobby Moore. Very eclectic.
Isn't that about football?
It is, yeah.
No, I don't think it's the same
okay.
one. So, obviously, we know a lot about Stalag Luft 3, and we know where these guys are going. They don't know where they're going, but we know where they're going. That kind of creates a problem for the series, because they don't know where they're going, and they are fucking terrified. They're just being loaded, loads and loads of these guys that have been shot down over Germany are being loaded into this train at this train station. And we know that, actually, Stalag Luft 3, in the realms of what a prisoner of war camp is, wasn't that bad. Yes, you could die there. You know, you could die trying to escape, as many of them did. You could be ill. You could catch something. Disease was there. But if you were going to pick where you wanted to be in the Second World War, a Japanese prisoner of war camp or a German one, you absolutely would pick a German prisoner of war camp. It was much, much better than a lot of the alternatives at the time. So they have to kind of create this tense moment. And they're doing quite a good job of it, because a lot of them are duffed up from the plane crash. A lot of them are duffed up because they've been caught by Germans who've beaten them up. And they're all being loaded onto this train. And suddenly, another train passes them. And that train is going somewhere else altogether. And that train is fucking crowded with people. And they look at it with absolute horror. They don't know where it's going, but they have a sense that something terrible is happening to those people that are on those train, because that train is full of Jews. And it is absolutely staggering scene. It's so amazing. It absolutely blew me away. I had to pause it and think about it before I went back to watch the rest of the series, because it's so powerful. That sense of absolute dread that they had suddenly being washed away for the, at least we're not there, that is where that's going, is awful. Even though, like I say, they don't know where that is going. But yeah, I think it's an incredible achievement, that scene. And I think a lot of it was brilliant. I really liked it. Yosra asked me the other day whether she should watch it. And I said, do you like war shit, Yosra? And she said, no. And I said, well, then no. Like, no, don't. It's either your bag or it's not your bag. But if you like a bit of war, a bit of history, that sort of stuff, absolutely. Masters of the Air was well worth a watch. I've also watched one episode of something that I know you've watched one episode of, Jen.
Okay.
Which is Gone.
The Gone, I think.
The Gone, yes. A Kiwi drama about a missing duo that have links to a past murder. There's some stuff about indigenous tribes. There's protests. It's a bit spooky. For me, it was too soon after Night Country to watch something that was very similar to Night Country.
Ooh.
So I stopped watching, but I'm interested to know what you made of it. This is on the BBC, by the way.
Obviously, Hannah, I don't think it's going to surprise you at all, given my sort of levels of engagement with things that I watched, but I didn't pick up on that at all. I don't know. I've watched one episode and I think I probably needed to pay a bit more attention to it. Like, where's it going? Is it to do with this crime family, or is it to do with the tourist that got killed before and there's butchered goats on a hill, and then we've seen a goat going up a hill, well, being dragged up a hill. And so the suggestion is, no, it's nothing to do with the crime family in Ireland.
It's just.
So, yeah, I thought it was all right. There's obviously, yeah, I think the first episode, I think it gives you enough interest to be like, oh, okay, where are you going with this? Because it sort of lays, it sows a lot of seeds, doesn't it? Like, possible corruption, issues with indigenous people, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I felt like it did quite a good job. But I think I will return to it. But I can't watch it until I'm back in Harwich, because me and my mum have started watching it together, Hannah. So,
okay.
You know.
Now, here's something else that's a bit similar to Night Country. A female detective in a remote place investigating some spooky shit. There's snow, there's protests, what the hell is going on. Again, I've only watched one episode of this because I mentioned it in the mail out last week, which you weren't here for. Passengers, which is on ITV. And I mentioned it last week. So if anyone who doesn't read the mail out, just what I said was that back in 2018, we had a live show that had both Sally Wainwright and Wonmi Masaku on. And I said, I thought things had got better for women on telly. And Sally Wainwright interrupted me and said, actually, Hannah, they've got better for white women on telly. There still hasn't been a drama series led by a woman of colour. Now, on primetime TV.
Any drama.
Any drama by a woman of colour at that point. Now, there has been some other things subsequently. But I found it really delightful that Wonmi is now fronting her own primetime drama on ITV. So that's genuine progress that we can see in the last 6 years. I love her. I think she's very good. I think from the first episode that I watched, she had a touch of Catherine Kayward about her, I thought. So that links in nicely with the Sally Wainwright link. Tell me what you thought of
it. Okay, so it's, ITV comedy, drama, thriller, supernatural, something or other. It is, I think, really, really hard to define what the genre is, as the reviews suggest. Wonmi Masaku, as you said, stands issue fave. She stars as Detective Inspector Rhea Anjua, who's transferred to sleepy village Chadder Vale, somewhere in the north of England, from the Met. She's wound up there to look after her husband's mad mum, Sue, but then he's gone and left her, so that's a bit shit. She's very ambitious and she's always looking to make big cases out of missing bins and whatnot, but she's got a boss who's always standing in her way. But maybe, maybe this time she's onto something as mysterious goings-on start going on among the town's young folk. So I love Wonmi. I think that she is pitch perfect in this and she straddles the many genres, like, effortlessly. I think she's got really good comic timing, which I don't think we've seen her do before, particularly. I don't think I've seen her do before. Maybe she has done comedy.
She's in the, what's that Channel 4 thing? The End of the Fucking World.
Oh, right. I've not seen that. Okay.
Her and Gemma Whelan are a double act. Yeah, I would say that sort of counts as comedy.
Okay.
But yeah, it's not usually what you see her in.
So, I mean, I think she's brilliant. I think she's a great actress. If I could say one thing, and maybe this does link to your Catherine Kayward point a little bit. I think, and this is not the point, but I am going to say it, like, she is properly beautiful, like a really beautiful woman. And I wish that costume departments would stop dressing her in shit anoraks because they don't know what to do with her. I just don't understand why people insist on aging her beyond her years. It's not necessary. But anyway, she's supported by a cracking cast: David Threlfall, Nico Mirallegro, Newt from Hollyoaks, if you're a Hollyoaks stalwart, such as mine. I know you're not, Hannah.
But thank you.
Daniel Ryan, I could go on. I will just mention Jack James Ryan and Matilda Freeman, who Corey fans will have seen before as Naughty Jacob Hay and the original Summer Spellman. And I think it's really great to see both of them doing something else, having moved on from Corrie. You don't always see it with the young ones, so, and I do think they were both particularly good, so I'm really happy to see them in something. Interestingly, you will know this, Hannah, but perhaps the listeners don't. It's created and written by the actor Andrew Buchan. That's how you say it, isn't it? Andrew Buchan, who I ordinarily feel sort of fairly ambivalent about, to be honest. I have enjoyed this. I'm sort of interested. I've watched all of it, so I've left it on a massive cliffhanger, which is frustrating, but I guess the hope is that they'll get a second series. It's still, like, I've watched it all on
ITV,
but it's still ongoing on ITV, so I guess we'll have to see how it does before we find out if it gets a second series. I mean, I think it should. I'd like to see more of it, but in a way, I also sort of wish they'd, like, wrapped it up in one.
Yeah, that's always the bid for a second series means that if you don't get it, then everyone's left saying, what? What happened there then? it will never be explained. Yeah. I'm going to stick with ITV. Best thing on ITV ever, possibly, but by a country mile, The Dry, 8-part comedy series on ITV. X is where I watched it. I don't know how it's on ITV or even if it's on ITV, because it's an RTE thing that was originally on BritBox, did really well on ITVX. So they've got the second series now. So I don't know how you can watch it on the television. Rasheen Gallagher as Shiv Sheridan, a recovering alcoholic who goes back to Ireland to stay with her family in the vain hope that that might actually help her stay sober. And what a ridiculous idea that was. Her family is full of really troubled souls. Her parents, in particular, are wonderful, played by Pam Boyd and Kieran Hines. At the end of the last series, this will be a spoiler if you haven't watched the first series, but I've told people enough. Bernie, her mum, who is played by Pam Boyd, also starts going to Alcoholics Anonymous. So they've got two people in the family going to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's written by Nancy Harris, who's originally a playwright, and it's structured so beautifully. It's like a proper three-act play done over 8 half-hour episodes. So the first couple of episodes, I was a bit like, I don't know where this is going, as it run out of steam a bit. But no, she's just really beautifully building things that are going to play out over the next 8 episodes. A lot of the original cast back, including Janet Moran, who plays her sponsor, Karen, who is just incredible. And some additions, Michael McElhattan, who people probably best know as Roose Bolton in Game of Thrones, plays Bernie's new boyfriend, Finbar. And that is an incredible performance because he is pretty low key, as McElhattan goes, because he usually plays a big bastard. And I'm not saying this guy's a nice guy. In fact, he's an absolute prick. But it's played as a really low key prick. So your hatred for him will grow. And Sam Keeley plays Alex, who is a new love interest for Shiv. Now, if you've seen Kin, you will recognise him. He is Viking in Kin. He traditionally usually plays bad blokes as well, but he's playing a nice bloke here. Or is he? Shiv has terrible taste in men. So you're not quite sure whether this guy's going to turn out to be an absolute prick or not. I've said all this before. Having 8 half-hour episodes gives her an extra hour than most comedy actually gets. And it really has a chance to breathe in that time. Brilliant soundtrack again. There's a difficulty when you know an alcoholic in real life. Alcoholics fall off the wagon. They go back to old boyfriends that are bad for them. And that is what would happen. But it doesn't necessarily make for great drama because they usually feel like it's just repetitive. Oh, she's back with that guy that she shouldn't be back with. Oh, she might fall off the wagon again. But I think that Nancy Harris deals with that so brilliantly. I'm not going to give too much away, but the threat is always there that something terrible is going to happen to Shiv, in the same way that the threat was always there that something terrible was going to happen to Bubbles, you know, in The Wire. Yes. And it's the way that you deal with that threat without actually always having to carry it through. It's absolutely wonderful. Oh, I love it. People should definitely give it a watch. Okay, let's have a break and come back and talk about some other stuff.
All right, Mickey here with an advert for BetterHelp Therapy Online. You all right? Such a small question and sometimes such a big question too, eh? Now, regular listeners will know I am no stranger to depression, and while over time, and with the help of some decent counselling and brilliant friends and family, I've established a toolkit to help when the constantly dripping tap of life gets a bit too much, that does not mean I am a stress-free human rainbow skipping through meadows. I mean, who is? We all carry around different stresses, big and small, and sometimes we can deal, and sometimes it's much harder to cope. Life, innit? Right now, I have a teenage puppy to deal with, and although I love her very, very much, she can be a lot. There, said it. And as quick a fix as it seemed to say, I'm fine, and push it all down into the big inside box and put that lid on. For me, that hasn't been a great long-term solution, in that if I don't get it off my chest, it will at some point come bubbling up, and it's never been one to pick its moments in a good way. I find talking means I can avoid it exploding out of me like a messy emotional volcano all over my nana's carpet. Also, during my various times in talk therapy, I discovered that saying something out loud or writing it down can make it seem much more manageable than allowing it to swirl around and grow ever bigger in my head. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I've found knowing how to reach out is sometimes the toughest bit, but BetterHelp is entirely online. Boom. Which means it couldn't be easier. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist, then work your sessions around your schedule. With more than 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Standard Issue listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/standard. That's betterhelp.com/standard.
So I did watch a couple of them.
Oh, interested to know what you think
about it. But a long time ago now, maybe when we first had a conversation about what we were going to watch, so it's maybe a month ago.
I mean, what a cast. It's got Julianne Moore in it, Nicholas Galitzine, who I watched a bit of an interview with him to see how you pronounce that name, and it was an American saying it, but they said Galitzine. So that's what I'm going with. It could be wrong. If it is, blame that American talk show host. He said it first. Anyway, they're the leads, and then
they say Basil, though.
I know. I thought it was going to be more like Galitzine, but Zine, that's what he said. So, you know. Anyway, Tony Curran is James the First as you have never seen him before, and a whole bunch of others, including Standard Issue faves Nicola Walker and Neve Algar. So it's basically about Mary and George Villiers. Mary is his ambitious mum, who's kind of married into an all right situation from a very not all right background, or like in society terms anyway. But her husband dies, and she wants to do even better. So she sends her son George off to a sort of training camp for, I don't know what you would call it really, but a training camp of sorts to get into James the First's court and become his favourite, which sort of means a bit on the side. George, aka the first Duke of Buckingham, became extremely influential in James the First's court, and if you've studied the Civil War at all, you will know he was rather less popular as the body of Charles the First. But it's really Mary who's the interesting one in all this, and Julianne Moore is bloody brilliant in it, and Nicola Walker too has just some really, really fucking good lines, and it's very nice to see the two of them kind of sparring with each other. I thought it was just the right mix of like history, comedy and drama. Brucey bonus, if you like seeing wangs on the telly, there are a lot of wangs in this. Maybe
more wangs than the deuce, do you think?
Oh, good question. Good. I mean, more like dancing wangs in this.
Right, okay.
Quite a lot of dancing going on with naked men. Yeah, so maybe don't watch it with your mum. That said, I did watch it with my mum. And to be honest, most of our conversations were along the lines of, was James the First really ginger?
Right. Well, yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, well, we revisited some portraits of him to find the answer to that. Because I was like, I'm fairly sure, like, all of the portraits I've ever seen of him, he's got, like, that long, dark hair that all of that lot had. But no, he does appear to be ginger. So, yeah, I thought that was just an affectation to be like, well, he's Scottish, kind
Look
of thing.
Look how Scottish he is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which, of course, here on Standard Issue, we're a big fan of. So, yeah.
I saw a couple, I thought it was camp as hell, but I think that probably the point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But like I say, it's been a while and it hasn't stuck in my head. So I think it probably, well, I didn't go back and watch any more. So there you have it. But yeah, I did find it very camp. But yes, I thought Nicola Walker was great. And Neve Algar is always great in absolutely everything. So yeah. So is that's a thumbs up, Jen?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very funny, as well as I mean, it's ever so camp, but yeah. It's written by men, I think, and
no shit.
I would suggest those men are probably gay, but who knows? Who knows?
I'm going to stick with Sky, because that's on Sky, just FYI, Sky, yeah. And now I'm going to stick with something that only came out about 2 days ago, so I've only had a chance to watch 2 episodes of it, so I would definitely revisit it, which is The Regime, which is...
Oh. Has that started?
It has. I think it started yesterday or the day before yesterday.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't know about that. I've been looking forward to this.
All the parts, which are six episodes, and they're about 45 minutes long, are all available to watch in one go, should you wish to. Now, this has got a pretty great pedigree. It is executive produced by Frank Rich, who's responsible for Succession, and Veep. It's written by Will Tracy, who's responsible for Succession. It's directed by Jessica Hobbs and Stephen Frears, and it stars Kate Winslet as the Chancellor of a fictional Central European state. And it has, scattered throughout it, loads of great British character actors, including Andrea Riseborough, Pippa Hayward. It also has Martha Plimpton, not British, but Hugh Grant will turn up at some point. I haven't seen him yet. So the premise is, Kate Winslet is this sort of mad woman, you know, because she wants to be in charge. So who else would she be other than a little bit bonkers? Who is running this country? She is a germaphobe. And then a guy called Herbert, a disgraced army officer, comes into her orbit. He's played by Matthias Schoenaerts, and he is really good in it. And then she seems to be falling under his spell, and he wants her to go back to the old ways. You know, stop dealing with America, become a rural agricultural society again. And she seems
to be like a Dominic Cummins kind of character.
This is the interesting point about it that I want to get to. With that pedigree, with Succession and Veep, which was, of course, Armando Iannucci, it feels like it probably seemed funny on paper. And it seems like I'm watching a comedy, but it hasn't made me laugh. Because it seems a little bit too similar to other stuff. For example, The Death of Stalin, which I absolutely adore, which really nails all of those side characters all machinating and trying to hold their position and being ridiculous, just being totally ridiculous human beings because they're terrified of what will happen to them if they don't agree. Yeah. And I've seen that done better, so that feels a little empty. But is he Dominic Cummings? Is it trying to say something about medicine? Is it trying to say something about Trump because of the germophobia stuff? I don't know. I don't know what it's trying to say. And I feel like I should know by now because I feel like it's not just me. I think it doesn't know what it's trying to say either. It's a satire, but I don't really know what it's a satire of. Maybe it's trying to satirize too many things at the same time. I don't know.
Themic link here to Mary and George. Is it trying to satirize these sort of people who infiltrate and influence leaders?
Well, possibly.
You know, the mad monks and all that.
Possibly, Jen, but it's trying too many other things to be that. If that's what it's trying to do, it should just sort of do that.
Just do it.
Just do that a bit better. Like, it's got too much going on. And there's only 6 episodes and I'm 2 in and I'm still a little bit at a loss. Kate Winslet is really great in it. Like, seriously, everyone is doing an amazing job. It looks beautiful. The production design is incredible. Everyone's doing a really good job. I just feel, ultimately, when you peel all the layers away, there's nothing in the middle. I don't know what it is.
Interesting.
Probably watch more of it, which is an indication of the fact that it is good. It's just not clear what it is a satire of.
Is it frustrating you? Is that the
problem? It's frustrating, but also it looks funny, but it isn't funny. I can't explain what I mean when I say that. It has all of the elements, the delivery, it's everything's delivered as if it's a joke, but yet the joke itself doesn't quite seem to be there. And this is from a guy who wrote on Succession. It should be incredible. Perhaps it came with too much baggage, or perhaps it's going to have a brilliant episode 5 and 6. So I will revisit it. We'll revisit it next month when you've seen some of it and I've seen all of it and we can know a bit better. Something else on Guy that I wanted to mention, a documentary called Tell Them You Love Me, which is, oh my, what a shit show. How interesting. I think it's about an hour and a half long. It's executive produced by Louis Theroux. And it's an investigation of a case. It's really, really interesting. It's an interesting case, and it has access to all the correct people. All the major players are represented here. And it's about something which is called facilitated communication. Do you know what that is?
No.
Quite often, with certain conditions, the problem with communication for people with disabilities, say, for example, some people with perhaps cerebral palsy, is that they can't speak. And for years, we've treated them, as society's treated them, as if they've got nothing to say. When in fact, they have a lot to say, but they don't have a way to communicate. And I think it was like in the 70s, or maybe it was in the 80s, somebody came up with this thing called facilitated communication, where somebody basically supports their arm so that they can use a keyboard. Now, if you've ever used a Ouija board or heard about what happens when you use a Ouija board.
Yes.
Sometimes people are moving the thing themselves. And sometimes, in fairness, they don't know that they are moving the thing themselves. They believe. So, while everybody was very excited about facilitated communication when it first happened, a lot of people doubted it. And then there was a bit of a backlash from disabled rights activists who were saying, are you you're just assuming that these people can't communicate? So it's a touchy subject because some people do really believe that it works and other people don't believe it works. Enter this academic who is called Anna Stubblefield. Now, she grew up, her mum used to work with disabled people. I think she may have fostered some of them. So she grew up around disabled people and has a long interest in helping them. She meets a man who talks to her about his brother, a man called Derek Johnson, who is nonverbal. And she decides she's going to start working with him. And suddenly, this man is not just communicating, he's actually at Rutgers University studying for a degree with her help. And then they have a meeting with his mother and his brother, in which she says, or he says through her, this is the point, that they are a couple and they would like to be in a relationship together. And that's where things get really, really icky. Really icky.
Yeah.
Because what it looks like now is that she was sexually abusing a disabled man. Now, obviously, she's white. He's black. There's another issue in there of a power dynamic that's going on. And I think this documentary does a really good job of investigating this really shocking, horrible story about what happened between these two people. And it's staggering to me that there are people there who are still prepared to defend her and say, well, perhaps she just thought she wanted it to be true so much that she imagined that this was happening and they were having a relationship. I don't know. It's really interesting. I don't want to say much more because everyone will draw their own conclusion about it. But I know what my conclusion is. And yeah, I very much think that Derek Johnson's family has a very, very good case to put against her and what she did to a man who could not defend himself. So yeah. That is also on Sky, and it's called Tell Them You Love Me.
Can I ask a question?
Of course you can.
And are they still a couple?
Oh, I should probably clear. This happened in the early 2000s, I think. This is relatively recent. But they're absolutely not a couple. She has no access to him at all now. She still openly defends what she does and believes that they were in a relationship. Interestingly, it hasn't got a release in the US. I heard Helen Lewis talking about it the other day, and she said she felt like maybe it was the conflicting argument between disability rights activists and black rights activists, that the conflict between those was seen as perhaps too incendiary. I've got one more thing that I want to mention then. It's back on Apple TV. It's called Manhunt. I mentioned this in the mail out. It's based on a book, 12 Days to Find the 12. I can't remember what it's called now, but basically I've read it as well. The 12 Day Hunt for Lincoln's Killer, I think it's called. And it is literally that. It's about what happens when John Wilkes Booth assassinates Lincoln in the theatre. And it's about the hunt for him. It does flick around a bit. It goes a bit back in time to give you a bit more context of who Wilkes Booth was and the war and slavery, a little bit more into that area. It literally launches into Assassination Day. John Wilkes Booth is played by Anthony Boyle, who was also in Masters of the Air, very good in it. He's Irish. And Edwin Stanton, who is the guy that is hunting him, is played by Tobias Menzies. In fact, there's British actors scattered throughout this. And lots of other people. Patton Oswalt in here. Matt Walsh from Veep as an incredibly racist doctor. Everyone doing a really great job. Again, it looks beautiful. Apple TV is possibly... And maybe it already has dislodged the BBC as the king of period dramas. They absolutely nail it. They are spending a lot of money to make sure...
Very high production values. Very high production.
Absolutely that. They are spending a lot of money to make sure that everything looks incredible. I'm two episodes in. I should be up to date with it, and I'm not, which suggests that I'm a little disappointed in it, and I shouldn't be, because if I sat down and read that entire book, this should be TV that is designed for me, particularly if it's got like good people in it, like Anthony Boyle and Tobias Menzies. I don't know, there's something not quite working for me. Possibly I need to just wait for it all to be on and then just sit and watch it one evening, just plow my way through it and sort of get into it a bit more. But we will revisit that when that is over as well, because I think it's... Yeah, I think it's almost definitely worth a watch. And I think, like I say, Apple is... The first time I had Apple TV, I cancelled it because I pretty much felt like I'd watched everything worth watching on there. But now I think they're coming into their own a bit. I think they are certainly surpassing Netflix and Amazon and Disney for the quality of their original content.
There's something on Disney that I meant to watch but haven't watched, which is, I think, written by... our friend Sally Wainwright, and starring, among others, our friend Craig Parkinson.
All right.
Called Renegade Nell, which looked like it might be fun. So I might try and watch that before next
time. I don't have
time.
A Disney one at the moment, because I can't afford to have them all. So I kind of have two, and I switch them round to see who's got what on. So I'm not going back to Disney until there's another series of Only Murders in the Building. But then I will have it for like 2 months so I can...
Yeah, and
crack
the price has gone
there.
Up, like...
Has it?
Massively. It was... What was it? Was it $7.99? It's now $10.99 a month. That is, you know, a big old increase.
Yeah.
And they don't really... You know, I think that they really are kind of making their money on legacy titles, shall we say, or owning, like, every old film ever.
Yeah.
They don't even own. So I make a lot of use of it for rated or dated, but also... Like Lyra, you know, I've got kids, so obviously the Disney Channel is useful. But yeah, they don't have, I would say, the series that they have on there that I would bother to watch are few and far between.
I think they've also clamped down on sharing, and I appreciate why they've clamped down on sharing, but I'd also like to make the point that when you live by yourself, they're not actually as good value to you. And traditionally, my brother and I have shared our subscriptions. So they've had one and I've had one. My defence is we are the same family, and were we living in the same house, it would be perfectly all right for us both to have access to it on our laptops. So that is traditionally how we've done things. Now TV have now done a thing where you can only watch on a certain amount of devices and you have to pay more if you want to share. Just another tax on people who live alone, eh?
Yeah, Netflix as well. Because I go between my flat in London and my mum's house in Harwich, and I want to use Netflix. It's literally my account, and I'm in both places. Like, why can't you use it when you travel? Do you know what I mean?
You also can't use it if you're abroad, which really annoys me.
But that's mad if you're paying for it.
Apple, you can, because I watched a couple of things when I was in Portugal. But Netflix and Now TV, if you're in America, you can't access your account, even though you're paying for it.
That's crazy. Sort yourselves out.
Outside the box.